So does Christmas still matter? By the looks of people here, it does seem to matter to some degree. Yes, it does. It matters for different reasons for different people. If you're the mayor of London, it matters negatively, because it seems that if you sing carols in London, it's called hate speech. You not haven't heard that one? No. In France, they cancelled Christmas as well. Christmas for others is important because it is a yearly reminder, as I spoke to someone today, to reset, of light coming into darkness. A reminder that we have a God who we can trust fully, a God who is pure good and pure light, in whom there is no darkness. That is incredible to have someone you can hope in that way. Then there are those who are familiar with Christmas, or maybe over familiar with Christmas. We know the carols, the decorations. We know the story. Well, sort of know the story. And in many senses, it's that group of people that I'd like to address this to today. Those who are familiar with Christmas, think they know Christmas, and think they know, by extension, Christianity. And one way you can test yourself this morning is if I was to ask you, or if some stranger was to ask you from a different culture, ask you to articulate Christmas and Christianity, would you be able to do it accurately? Or how does the Christmas story fit into Christianity? That'll help you to understand, do I get it or don't I get it? So let's start by saying, for the first thing to say this morning is that Christmas, first and foremost, is an announcement. It is a herald. Hark, the herald angels sing. Herald means to announce. In Luke's gospel, Gabriel to Mary. Gabriel announces that Jesus, the son born to her, will be the son of the Most High. This Jesus will be heir to David's throne. This Jesus will be king to an everlasting kingdom. In other words, it is an announcement of a king, an eternal king. In other words, there is a new government in the universe. The angel announces to Joseph, the child conceived to Mary by the power of the Holy Spirit is to be named Jesus, which means the Lord saves. To the shepherds, as heavens open up, angel and a multitude of angels announce good news of great joy. A Savior has been born, Christ the Lord. And the very fact that maybe the only time in heaven, Earth's history, that the heavens open up and there is a display of multitudes of angels, ought to tell you something of the significance of what's happening here. This announcement is very important. Then, of course, you get the response to the angels. Mary begins to sing and declare, announce through song about Jesus. Elizabeth declares the truth about God. The shepherds actually evangelize. And the couple in the temple, Simeon and Anna, they start to tell the world about this Jesus. In other words, something significant has happened. Once in eternity event has happened, the world stopped, the angels appeared, and it has been declared now for 2,000 years, and it will keep going on. Jesus is good news. And here in John's Gospel, we are told that John the Baptist is a witness. In other words, he too is declaring what he knows, in legal terms, a witness. And he tells us this, that the Word became flesh and dwelt amongst us. He also says here in verse 7 that he came as a witness to bear witness about the light that all might believe through him. He was not the light, but came to bear witness about the lights. The true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. That was the announcement. John came telling us the true light is a person, and that person is Jesus. Again, the very fact this is an announcement tells you something about the character of God. God doesn't stand up and say, here's a suggestion, or here is a commandment. He's saying, this is what I am doing. It is the zeal of God. It is the passion of God. It is the power and plan of God that is telling the world what he is doing. If you hear nothing else, Christmas is about the activity of God in human history. That's why it is an announcement. That's why it's a declaration. That's why it's called a gospel. And what is that announcement? That light has come into the world. Those who are familiar with Christianity may shrug their shoulders. There's many lights out there. There's the Hanukkah festival of lights. Hindus have a festival of lights called Diwali. In the Quran, God is described as the light of heaven and earth. And even historians call the 16th century Age of Reason the Enlightenment. So what's different here? John says this, that Jesus is the true light, which gives light to everyone. See the distinction? Not a light to a specific group of people, but the light to every people group in the world. That true light has entered human history in the person of Jesus, and he is for every person. And if true light has come into the world, then something else follows, because light is never neutral. When a light is switched on, it doesn't ask permission. It reveals what is there, it exposes what is hidden, and it forces a response. Will you hide, or you let the light shine upon you? Will you step into the light or turn away? Will you put your hands over your eyes and pretend it's not there? And so the first response we are given here in verse 10, the very next line, is this. It's a negative response. In fact, two negative responses. He, that is Jesus, was in the world, and the world was made through him, yet the world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own people did not receive him. Stop for a moment and think how heartbreaking this is. That God, the Creator, comes into human history, and what does the world do? Didn't know him. More tragically, he came to his own people, the chosen people of Israel, and the religious and political leaders of Israel, as well as of Rome, don't like him because he's influential. In fact, the most influential man who's ever existed. And so they murdered him. It's the reason why Jesus was rejected then and today is still the same. The human heart is dark. The human heart, left to its own devices, left unchecked, is incredibly evil. Now, philosophy and counselors and psychologists have been telling us for the past 70 years that humanity is good. I think we need to check the evidence. History of war, our history of domestic violence, our history of family abuse, the sexualization of our children, the greed of the heart. We need to be reminded that the human heart is in fact bad that does some good, not good that does some bad. We are disposed to darkness. We are disposed to control and power. And when Jesus the light steps in, that is a threat to my autonomy to my life. So the sole reason why human beings, by their own effort, cannot receive the light, because darkness only produces darkness, and we love it too much to give it up. And this is the reason why God says, I am announcing that I'm stepping in and I'm going to do something. Because we cannot solve our own problems. And maybe why this is the next verse is so astonishing. Because despite rejection, despite resistance, despite refusal, some people, as a gift of God, actually receive Jesus as Lord. Let me read it to you in verse 12. But to all who did receive him, who believe in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. So Christmas is full of gifts, some beautifully wrapped that you don't want to open them, you just want to look at them for a while. Some gifts are opened and it is what you expected, which is fantastic. Some are surprising. Some are awkward. Smile, say thank you. In the back of your mind, you say, where am I going to store that? But every gift has one thing in common. It must be received. You can picture the present under the tree and you can admire it. You get your phone, take a photo, and you can post it. You can talk about it. But unless you receive it, open it, and take it, it's not yours. Not truly, anyway. And it works the same way with Jesus. You must receive him. Yet to all who receive him, just pause for a moment, that word receive matters. This sentence is the doorway to Christianity. You miss this and you miss everything. God does not say to you, if you want Jesus, you must be well behaved. You've got to clean yourself up. You've got to prove to everyone that you're serious. He does not say those born into Christian families, those raised with Bible stories, to those who attend church, get the gift. No. He does not say those who take communion, those who speak in tongues, those who are baptized in full immersion, or those who give 10% get the gift. No, it's not what he says. God says clearly, you need to receive Jesus as a gift. Think about our children this morning. They didn't earn their gifts. They don't negotiate terms. They don't say, let me prove I deserve this. Wide-eyed, open-handed, in their pajamas, they receive the gift. Do you get the point? Christmas reminds us that God does not wait for us to grow up and be strong enough. He comes when we are small and ready to receive. It must then go on to ask the following question, how then do we receive Jesus as the true light? Verse 12 says this, but all who receive him, who believe in his name, he gave the right to become children of God. Here we are told that to receive Jesus and to believe in Jesus are synonymous. And there are certain data points that we need to believe, that he is God, yes, that he existed, yes, that he lived and died, yes. That he was raised to life, yes. He did that for us, for our forgiveness and our salvation. Yes, all data points. But you get past the data points. You get past the information. I'll try and give you some sort of analogy to help you with that. Imagine someone knocks at your door. You hear it, you recognize it. You know someone's there. What are your options? Pretend, stay quiet, hold your breath, hopefully those go away. You can hear them and say from your chair, go away, I'm not taking visitors today. Or just quietly just hope they go away. The other option, of course, is to let them in. Now, you don't achieve anything by letting them in. You simply welcome the guest inside. What happens when the guest comes inside? Sees the clean rooms and he sees the messy rooms. Sees the bathroom and the laundry. Sees the kitchen sink. He sees everything. So you begin to share that space with that person. But that person sees everything. You invite them into your home. When you receive Jesus, you receive him into your very being. Allow him to take residence in your very life. Psalm 51 is a great example of that. King David, known as a great worshipper of God, gets a bit lazy, sees a woman, takes her, commits adultery. Don't say no to the king. She falls pregnant, so he calls her husband to come back and sleep with her, but he won't sleep with her because he knows he's being set up. So what does he do? He sends her husband to the front line to get killed, then marries her. That's the king. Psalm 51 is when he's actually receiving God in a real and deep sense. He says, against you, you only have I sinned and done what is evil in your sight. And then he appeals to God for forgiveness, says, according to your great mercy, forgive my sins. He doesn't say, look what I've done, God, forgive me. He says, I'm stuffed, but you're merciful. You're steadfast in your love. Wipe out my transgressions. That's the change that happens when you receive Jesus. Not through your own merits, but appealing to his goodness. And so we're told in verse 13, when that happens, we are born of God. Verse 13, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, nor of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. To be a Christian, you must be born of God. Let's develop that language a bit more. It is, again, vital to understanding Christianity. Birth is not something you do. Think about it for a moment. What part did you have in your birth? Anyone? Nothing. Anyone remember their birth? No. Think about it for a moment. You claim credit for your birth. Oh, yeah, I nailed my birth. Pulled myself up by the umbilical cord. Total self-made baby. Here I am. None of us crawled out of the womb, hand the doctor our resume. You didn't say I've worked really hard with my lung development these past 10 months. I've earned my spot in the family. None of us did that, and that's why God has used the language of birth. It works the same way. To be a child of God, you don't plan it, you don't earn it, you don't bring your resume. You receive it. It happens to you. That is Christianity. That is God's initiative. That is God's zeal and God's passion for us. Let's try and land it now. There's a reason why we give gifts at Christmas, and it's not because of St. Nicholas, and it's not because of Santa Claus. Both Santa Claus and St. Nicholas stole the idea from God himself. Jesus is the gift of God. In the same way you can't earn a gift, you cannot earn Jesus. In the same way you must receive and open your gift, so you must receive and submit to Jesus as Lord. Ultimately, Christmas is not about what you've done for God. It's about what you receive from God. This is called grace and the gift of God. So today you've heard the greatest announcement you will ever, ever, ever hear, an announcement you can stake your life upon and celebrate for the rest of your life. There is no better news in all the history of the world than Jesus, God's gift to humanity, because it's about God and his zeal for us. It's about his steadfast love for a rebellious world. It's about God coming to us and solving our problem for our sake, that he might be glorified for the great and good God that he is. So what is your relationship with God like? Are you still under the impression you must achieve God, that you must increase your attendance and increase your niceness? Then God to you must be a boss. You must be the employee. And you must be anxious about your future. You receive Jesus, it means the end of pretending. Take off the mask and say, Lord, I'm sick, help me. And God, by the power of his Spirit, will change your heart and you become a child of God. Again, Christmas is not about what you bring to God. It's about what God brings to you, his son, his life, his family, that you might become his child. Let me pray.